This is the Historians Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore. Our guest will be Lauren Roberts, Saratoga County historian. We'll talk with her in just a few minutes, discussing a documentary about the creation of the Sacandaga Reservoir, now called the Great Sacandaga Lake, a flood control reservoir built to protect cities on the Hudson River from devastating flooding. The body of water is now also a major recreation resource in the southern Adirondacks. The documentary, worked on by several people over a good many years, and playing, I might say, to large crowds at historical societies and so forth around the area, well, the name of the documentary is Harnessing Nature, Building the Great Sacandaga Lake. Let's listen to some excerpts from the documentary, then talk with Lauren Roberts. For centuries, native people, and later mainly European immigrants, lived where the lake is now in the Sacandaga Valley, along the Sacandaga River. British colonist Sir William Johnson, who lived in the 18th century in Johnstown, led fishing parties to the Sacandaga River.
Sir William Johnson, the superintendent of Indian Affairs for the British Crown, was the single largest landholder in the Mohawk Valley, and his holdings extended to the southern portion of the Sacandaga Valley, known as the Great Vlei. Johnson, who was well known for his service in the Seven Years' War, built two lodges, summer house for entertaining and fish house for fishing and hunting. Though these properties were burned during the American Revolution, this area is still referred to as Fish House by locals. Both the French and Indian War and the American Revolution exposed soldiers to the rich natural resources of the valley. After hostilities subsided, land patents previously issued by the British government were surveyed, and the patentees began selling tracts of land to early European settlers migrating west.
In the 19th century, the Fonda, Johnstown, and Gloversville Railroad was constructed to link those cities. Eventually, the line extended to Northville, and the railroad built Sacandaga Park, an elaborate amusement complex that you reached by railroad.
The area known as Sacandaga Park began as a Methodist meeting camp in the mid-1800s. When the FJ&G Railroad acquired the local short line in 1881, the property was soon adorned with a number of beautiful lodges. But after a destructive fire in 1898, the FJ&G Railroad decided to rebuild the park and embark upon an enormous expansion.
And then the railroad company realized that in other places after the war, there were parks being made. And they said, ho, why don't we just capitalize on this and make ourselves a park. And so they did. And they had Midway, they had everything in Midway. Oh, the beautiful, most beautiful carousel and donkeys that you ride. And they had a big area where you could ride around in the, with the donkeys. And there was a bowling alley and a house of fun and shooting galleries and a beautiful roller skating rink that what turned into a dancing pavilion afterwards. But I never saw a more beautiful rink anywhere, and I've roller skated in quite a lot of places.
In the 20th century, the state of New York grew increasingly concerned with annual destructive floods in cities along the Hudson River. Mainly to alleviate that flooding, the Sacandaga Reservoir was proposed to serve as a kind of holding tank so that water flow could be regulated as it went into the Hudson. From the documentary, the voice of Charlotte Duncan Russell.
When I was a little girl, I heard them talking about making a dam. And that was when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, when they were beginning to talk about that. I had nightmares because I could think, and they were going to flood the valley. That was what they talked about. And I could think of the flood in the Bible. And I really had nightmares about that. And I thought, oh, they can't do that to people.
All through the 1920s, the land was cleared in the Sacandaga Valley, and a dam was built at Conklingville. From the documentary, John Ferguson on the efficiency of the project.
The quality of the work for the type of equipment that they had was really quite extraordinary. And when you think the whole project, the purchase of 1,200 parcels of land, the building of the dam, the building of all the roads and the bridges, the removal of the cemeteries, the purchase of all the land, all that was done for $12 million. It's extraordinary, I think.
It was an amazing accomplishment, actually.
And now you have this beautiful lake that attracts people and creates something in the way of a new industry that was really never intended, and something that's really quite special, I think.
The gates of the Conklingville Dam were closed, and the Sacandaga Reservoir filled up in 1930. In the documentary, divers tell about what you see underwater today at Great Sacandaga Lake.
I've been diving the Sacandaga now for about 12 years. We usually go up to Conklingville. Today we dove on the Day Center Bridge. Was our first dive. We dropped down into darkness and started looking. We found a steel iron truss bridge. And we followed it along to see where its course was and the piers and things like that. And we found it in the upright position and took video of it. We could actually see the guardrails, so to speak, on the sides of the bridge. Second dive we did was up at Conklingville, which they moved the bridge off of the piers into the river bottom. They didn't blow them up, as you can witness. You'll see the top of the piers in the video, that they just cut the bolts and then just pushed it off with some kind of excavator or something.
Aside from the two bridges, Day Center and Conklingville, about the only other thing we've seen is empty foundations that had the buildings on, but they burned the buildings down and they just left the foundations as they were. The streets, you can see tree stumps where the trees used to line the streets, but all you see is the roads and foundations. There's no churches down there, church steeples, no structures, no signs. Just empty, desolate area where a village once stood.
Great Sacandaga Lake today is ringed with camps, mostly summer homes for people from nearby and far away. One of the great traditions is the Labor Day weekend Ring of Fire, when bonfires are lighted at camps all around the lake. Sylvia Parker explained in the documentary that her family started the Ring of Fire tradition.
My mom, Agnes Gilbert, started the Ring of Fire, but it was because of my brother, Louis. He got her interested in it. My brother had a cottage up on Keuka Lake, and we went out there on the 4th of July, and Louis said to Mom, "I want you to see something." So he took her in a boat out in the middle of Keuka Lake. And it was getting near dark, and everybody around Keuka Lake was starting up their bonfires or their flares or whatever they had. And Mom said it was just beautiful. So when we got home, she said, "I think we could do that around our lake. Would that be nice?" So we did, and we sent the flyers, so that you've got a picture of the flyers. And we started in 1988. We put the flyers out when we went around the whole lake and dropped off flyers at all the stores, bars, whatever place we could find a place to put a flyer. And the first year, it was quite successful. And it has grown every year since then. That was in 1988 we started.
We'll continue on the Historians Podcast with Lauren Roberts. We'll talk with her about the creation of the documentary right after this word from our GoFundMe campaign. The Historians Podcast is made possible by a GoFundMe drive, which is on right now. We appreciate your donations. Go to the following website, GoFundMe.com/historians2018. Or, if you'd rather send a check by mail, make it out the check to me, Bob Cudmore, and send to 125 Horstman Drive, Scotia, New York, 12302. Thank you very much. The Historians Podcast continues with Lauren Roberts. How you doing, Lauren?
I'm good. Thank you, Bob.
Lauren Roberts is Saratoga County historian. And what was your role in a creation of the documentary we've been hearing excerpts from, which is called Harnessing Nature, the Great Sacandaga Lake?
I was a co-producer of the film along with Jason Kemper, who is the director of Saratoga County Planning and also the treasurer of the Great Sacandaga Lake Advisory Council. And also Peter Pape, who was our documentarian, was another co-producer.
So quite a few hands worked on this. But making a documentary is quite a project. Had you ever done that before?
I had never worked on a documentary project. We started out as a film committee with many of the historians from communities around the lake, and it was really a collaborative project. And as we got the funding from Great Sacandaga Lake Advisory Council, we had to boil it down to a couple of key players to be able to complete the documentary in just under 2 years.
Okay. And when were you finished? When did you start showing it around, if you will?
We released it in November on Thanksgiving weekend. It was the first public showing, and that was at Northville Central School Auditorium. We showed it twice in one day, and we had about 400 people come to each one of those screenings.
Yeah, I would say in local terms, this has been as big as Star Wars going around, you know, because we saw it, my family and I saw it up in Charlton, where my daughter and son-in-law live, and it was more than packed. I mean, it was standing room only to see it.
Yes, we have had an overwhelming response to the film, much more so than we ever expected. We've probably shown it ourselves maybe about between 12 and 15 times, and I know other local groups have shown it as well. We've sold almost, I would say, around 4,000 copies of the DVD, which was way more than we ever expected. And we're just so thrilled that, you know, so many people are showing an interest in the project.
Yeah, 4,000. That's really great. And as with a lot of people, our family has a connection up there. I mentioned that my daughter and son-in-law live in Charlton, but they have a weekend summer camp up near the Bachelorville Bridge. And so, of course, they're one of the 4,000. They bought a copy of this. And I imagine that's, well, would you say, I mean, that's an obvious point, that this is the great interest. So many people have vacationed there and know the area and so forth.
Yes, and I think it's an interesting story. I think it's not only the people that live there now that want to know the past, but I think there are a lot of families that still have connections to firsthand accounts of the people who were actually affected by the flooding. So even though, you know, it's been almost 90 years, there are still family names that live in the valley along the lake today that had relatives that were primarily affected back in the 1920s.
Mm. Yes, and in fact, that's a main part of the documentary, is you show the tension between the people that lived there, who were in a sense being evicted, not in a sense, they were being evicted from their homes, and the needs of the larger population of the state to prevent flooding. One thing that occurred to me is, you know, the past few years or number of decades, there's been a lot of controversy about the regulating agency, the Hudson River, Black River Regulating Agency. I think somehow the angst or the anger of the residents who were displaced have carried over to the new occupants, if you will, you know, because maybe they're not quite aware of the reason that the lake has to go up and down and so on and so forth.
Sure. I think, you know, there is definitely two sides to this story, and we did try to show both sides. There were devastating floods every spring, almost every spring, and definitely something needed to be done. Of course, you didn't want to be one of the ones that was affected or flooded out, but it ended up that the people in the valley were the ones that had to pay the price for the downstream communities to have flood control. Hudson River, Black River Regulating District, has, you know, had some controversy over the years, but as far as the process of this film goes, their entire staff was wonderful to us. I spent many days in their basement, in the field office, searching through records, and they do have many, many different record collections. So I'm very grateful to them for all of their help, and we wouldn't have been able to have some of the material we had for the film without their help.
Well, since we aired some of the excerpts of the documentary, you had a gentleman, I don't know if we even identified him when we put it, well, I guess we did, but his name is John Ferguson, talking about what a engineering feat the creation of the reservoir was. Who was Mr. Ferguson?
So John Ferguson is a surveyor, but he also worked for the regulating district. And he was a wealth of knowledge. I would say he was the person I would always call if I had a question, mostly about the surveying portion of it, which was such a huge undertaking. You can see in the documentary some of the photographs we took of the surveying equipment they used, which Hudson River, Black River Regulating District has saved and they have in their field office. You know, what we would consider rudimentary equipment, and the surveying was so spot on, they still use many of those surveys as their base points for today, 90 mm-hmm. years later. Mm-hmm. They were within inches in their accuracy. It really is quite amazing. But John has really spent a lot of time researching. He's very familiar with Sacandaga Park and that area. He's a lake resident, and he was a great interview and had a lot of good information, both from working for the district and also as a surveyor in the Sacandaga Valley region.
And we also used an excerpt from Charlotte Duncan Russell. Who is she?
Charlotte is a former Village Northville, Town of Northampton historian. She has passed away. She passed away quite a while ago, but that particular interview was done in the 1980s with Charlotte, and she grew up in Northampton and Northville area, and she was one of the people who remembered what it felt like to be affected firsthand by the flooding. And I think the clip you have, she tells the story about how she was a little girl and she thought about when they said they were going to flood the valley, about the flood in the Bible. And that's, you can imagine in the minds of children how this would seem, that mm-hmm. you know, that they were going to flood their homes.
Mm-hmm. And we also had an excerpt about the Sacandaga Park, the Fonda Johnstown and Gloversville Park. That somehow always gets into the stories of the Great Sacandaga Lake or the creation of the reservoir, because it seems so, I don't know what it seemed, but I mean, they flooded people's houses, but there was this amusement park that got flooded.
Sure. I think it's one of the better known stories of Sacandaga, because Sacandaga Park was such a destination from the late 1800s right up until they flooded. And of course, the FJ&G had enough money to fight the regulating district, whereas a lot of local residents did not have the money to hire individual lawyers to plead their case. The FJ&G was able to get an injunction, and they did hold up the project. Ultimately, the court found it against them, but they were able to extract a handsome settlement, mm-hmm. Even though they did lose a large majority of the park.
And I was fascinated, and I ask you for this particular excerpt, with the divers, I mean, people who dive under Sacandaga, you know, for whatever reason. Why do they do that? Do they do that for the documentary, or do they do it for like business or other reasons?
Yes, the divers are part of a recreational group. They dive all over, so it really is for recreation. We contacted them because there is a lot of speculation about what lies under the water. I've lived on the lake my whole life. I've heard several stories of people hitting the church steeples with the props of their boats, or, you know, there's full houses under there, there's trains under there. And we wanted to be able to show firsthand with a dive team what actually was down there. And we sent the dive team down on those two bridges. Those are the two major structures that were left behind. And the reason that they're left is because those two bridges in particular are in the original riverbed where it's deeper. The area in the southern part of the lake, which was referred to as the Vlei, which means swamp, it's really quite a shallow area. They wouldn't have been able to leave any large structures. And, you know, as part of the cleanup, anything up that was going to be above elevation 740 had to be cleared out of the valley. Foundations were filled in, wells were filled in, stumps were removed above 740 elevation. So really, you know, those, there are no large structures down there. You do see foundations. They missed a few gravestones, you know, things like that that are close to the ground you absolutely will see. But there are no real tall structures besides these bridges that were dropped down into the mm-hmm. riverbed.
Another image of from the documentary just flashed into my head. We're talking about, I mean, they had to move cemeteries, but you concluded in the documentary that they did a pretty good job. I mean, they were very thorough in that.
Sure. You can imagine, you know, that was quite an emotional part of the project for all of the Local Valley residents. They moved almost 4,000 graves. We did an interview with Don Williams, who's a local storyteller whose family was from the Northampton, Mayfield area. And he talks about how one of his family members was actually present when they were digging up the graves of two small children who had passed away, and they had to move them from the Cranberry Creek Cemetery up into the King Cemetery in Sacandaga Park. So, you know, you can imagine if there were family members there watching these work crews, what they may have referred to as the Boneyard Gang.
Right. And people that took down the barns were called barn busters, as I recall.
Right. Don Bowman has written a few books. He worked on one of the gangs in the summertime, and he's written a few books that give some of the tales, the stories that he picked up when he was on the crew.
And talking about the graves, though, I mean, there are Native Americans buried there that probably are still under the water. I mean,
sure. We know that they weren't marked by the traditional headstones, European headstones that we think of. So really, there wasn't a lot for Hudson River Regulating District to go on in finding those grave sites. So it's almost surely there are Native American burials that were left beneath the water.
Now, you let on a few minutes ago that you grew up on the lake, right? I mean, it was your permanent home, or was it a summer home, or where?
I did. Yep, I lived there year-round. I went to Northville Central School from kindergarten through 12th grade, and I have always been fascinated with the history of the lake. As a child, you find medicine bottles or pieces of ceramic along the shores in the fall when the water goes down, and you hear the stories. I've always been fascinated with local history, but growing up on that lake, you know, that has such a unique story. I was always involved, and this has really been a dream project for me.
Yes. And also, there's a certain depth to this documentary. You mentioned in the names, and I've forgotten the name that you said, but wasn't there somebody who was like working on this some years ago, 10, 20 years ago, and did a lot of interviews and had a lot of video and audio?
Yes, we were so lucky to find Peter Pape. He is a local documentarian out of Glens Falls.
And I'm sorry, what's his name again?
Peter Pape.
Pape.
P-E-P-E, Pape.
Okay, well, go ahead.
And Peter worked with two people, Kay Stevens and Ed Niehammer, who started this project back in the 1980s. They were looking to create a film about the creation of the reservoir. So they did several interviews, which we were able to use some of in our film, and they collected information. They hired a plane to do aerial shots, but the film never came together. They never finished the project. There was some discrepancies about what to include in the film. Peter ended up getting sick. Things fell apart, and they never were able to finish the documentary. But Peter kept all of his footage and always hoping someday he would be able to finish the project. And I heard about Peter because a company that I used to work for knew him for his underwater archaeology work with Joe Zarzynski, because he has done a few other local documentaries, such as The Lost Radeau, about the Radeau at the bottom of Lake George. So someone suggested to me, why don't you contact Peter Pape? And so I contacted him, not knowing that he had already worked on this project in the 80s, and not knowing that he had all of that original footage of people, you know, who have passed away many years ago, but who were the firsthand accounts. And I really think that those interviews of people who actually lived through this, you know, really lend a credibility to the film that we wouldn't otherwise have.
It does. I also want to ask you, who was the narrator? Because we used his voice as some earlier.
Yep, the narrator is Donald James, and he has worked with Peter Pape on other documentaries.
So he's a local. These are all, in a sense, local people or regional
sure.
people?
Sure, yes.
Yeah. And what about getting the documentary, which again is called Harnessing Nature, Building the Great Sacandaga Lake? I mean, you've been so successful showing it to historical societies and schools and so on and so forth, but are you trying to get it on television, or has it been on television already?
It hasn't been on television yet. We anticipate possibly connecting with WMHT or something, some kind of public television within the next year or so. For right now, we're just trying to show it publicly around the area, make sure everyone knows that it's here, try to educate schools, historical societies, library groups about the project. And then, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get our foot in the door and get it on television to a wider audience.
Okay, well, let me put in a word for WMHT. I've done some work for them over the years, and actually on their service for the blind and visually impaired, RISE, they carry this program, the Historians Podcast. So, hope to see it there. And do you have any plans to do another film? Or, I mean, now you're back to your job as Saratoga County historian, and you're working on other things?
Yes. The project took about 2 years to complete. So I don't have any plans to do any more work on films in the immediate future. Although, you know, working with a team like Jason Kemper and Peter Pape, I had a really great experience. I learned a lot about documentaries, and I could definitely see creating another one in the future if the right project comes along.
I'm sorry, Lauren, we are out of time. Lauren Roberts, our guest. This is the Historians Podcast. I'm Bob Cudmore.